Hare Krishna, Hare Bol, I'm Sankirtan Priya. Thank you very much. Thank you to the devotees for allowing me to give this class. You'll be a little bit surprised to know that even though I like talking a lot, you know, I get nervous, especially this new format. So today is a very, very special day. It is the appearance of Sri Advaita Acharya. Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu Ki Jai. He's a very, very foremost associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, when we see the pictures of Lord Chaitanya, particularly in the Panchatattva pictures, we always see Advaita Acharya. So today is his appearance day. There's so much to talk about Advaita Acharya, but as usual, time is not on our side. Also, I have to chant one of the verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, so I'll press on with that. I'll chant everything on my own. It's much more easier. I will skip the word to word. And I'll just go into translation and purport. And we'll speak a little bit about that. And then from there, we'll speak about Advaita Acharya. Thank you. This morning, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18, text number 4. The chapter is entitled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmin Boy. Translation. This was so because those who have dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconceptions at the last moment of their lives. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The highest perfection of life is attained by remembering the transcendental nature of the Lord at the last moment of one's life. This perfection of life is made possible by who has learned the actual transcendental nature of the Lord from the Vedic hymns sung by the liberated souls like Sukadev Goswami or someone in that line of disciplic succession. There is no gain in hearing the Vedic hymns from some mental speculator. When the same is heard from an actual self-realized soul and is properly understood by service and submission, everything becomes transparently clear. Thus, the submissive disciple is able to transcendentally and continue to the end of life. By scientific adaptation, one is able to remember the Lord even at the end of life, when the power of remembrance is slackened due to the derangement of bodily membranes. For a common man, it is very difficult to remember things as they are at the time of death. But by the grace of the Lord and his bona fide devotees, the spiritual masters, one can get this opportunity without difficulty. And it was done in the case of Maharaj Parikshit. Translation again. This was so because those who have dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, and who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconception even at the last moment of their lives. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militan Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyatya Desatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'm asking the Vaishnavas, they can give me blessings to say something this morning, appropriate, about the verse and about Advaita Acharya. I seek your blessings. Vanchakalpa tribhyascha kripa sindubhyaiva cha patitonam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. This human form of life that has been awarded to us is called Uttam Janam, the topmost of the 8,400,000 species of life. Sansar, we go through all these different bodies, and when we get this human form of life, then we have to make sure that we utilize it properly. So from the moment we are born and the ultimate when we die, it is important what we do between A and B, from birth and death. Most people want to drink, enjoy, marry, but tomorrow you will die. But according to this verse, we should utilize our time for Katha Amritam, trying to learn about the transcendental topics of the Lord. And here it is emphasized, Smarantam means to remember. So during our life, we use the process of Sharvanam Kirtanam Vishnu, which is a verse chanted by Prahlad Maharaj. So Sharvanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. So we first begin the process of Krishna consciousness by hearing. We hear about Krishna. We hear about his pastimes. We hear about his activities. We hear about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So this is how it begins, by listening. Then once we've understood to some degree at least, then we try to kirtanam. Then we try to speak it to others, tell others, or preach to others. Or in this case, in Srimad Bhagavatam class, we talk about these topics, which leads to the next part of the devotional service, which is smaranam. So this is what has been emphasized over here, smaranam. And the ultimate goal of smaranam is to try and remember Krishna at the time of death. Death is the ultimate test in our life, what we remember. So many things we have done in our lives, and whatever the main activity in our life is, that's what will be running through our life. Whatever our main attachments are, whatever our greatest fears are, whatever our loved ones are, that is what our smaranam, that is what we are going to remember at the time of death. And the problem is, if we get towards death, as Prabhupada explains over here, our body becomes deranged and our remembrance is slackened. This is the natural occurrence of the body. As it gets older and older, we can't remember things. When we try to remember our activities we do, we can't remember. Basically, we're trying to find it even difficult to remember yesterday. If you try to trace what you did 2 or 3 days ago, remembrance is a tough one. Memory starts to go very, very quickly. So it is a tough time at the time of death. We're in pain. We're in difficulty. The body is not functioning properly. So we have to try and remember. There's a great king, King Kulashekar, he has stated that when he's young and healthy, Krishna Vaipara Arvindo, that I want to die now because I can remember you. Because at the time of death, I will be choking, I will be coughing, there will be mucus, and I will be fearful. So at that time, the mind is so disturbed. And that's a little practical kind of example, at least in my kind of situation. When we get sick, when we get the flu, when we're in so much pain and suffering, at least I know for a fact that I make an excuse. Oh, I can't, I'm feeling groggy, I'm feeling difficult, give me a lem sip or something. So when we are suffering, the tendency is it's very difficult for us to concentrate and maybe slacken a little bit and use the suffering or the sickness as an excuse not to even practice. But these are the symptoms that we will be experiencing towards the end of our life. And it behooves us to try and sharpen our intelligence to try and remember Krishna at the time of death. It's not easy, it's difficult. I mean, I have a little experience in my own life. I had a near-death experience. Some of you who might be following some of my life, I said this some time ago, and it was in Mayapur. I was in Mayapur, and I was swimming in the Ganges. And I had my two children. They were about 13 or 14 of that age. And then I'm not a particularly good swimmer. And as I was swimming, if you know about the Ganges, they have something called undercurrent. So externally, it looks nice, tranquil, and the river is flowing. But underneath, because the river is flowing quite fast, particularly as it comes round a corner, it creates an undercurrent and a swirl. And as I was swimming in the Ganges, this undercurrent, it pulled me. And as I was saying, I'm not such a good swimmer. And as a result of that, it started pulling me down and down in the Ganges. And I started freaking out, and I was like flapping and, you know, trying to splash to try and go up. And then as I came up, I started grasping for air. And in the distance, I could see my kids, and they could see that I was drowning in the Ganga. They could see that I was in a helpless situation. And of course, at that near-death experience, I thought I was going to die. I started thinking about the kids, and I was saying, oh, I'm not going to see them anymore. I'm going to die. It happened so quick in those few seconds. I thought I was going to die. And then the current of the water pulled me back down. And as I was struggling, my gumsha came, and it got tangled up in my legs. So I had the undercurrent pulling me down. I had the gumsha tangled up, and still, I still wanted to try and survive. So I struggled and I struggled. Then I went back up, and I was again saw my kids, and I was really, really like saying, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Not now. And then again, the water pulled me down again. And still, you know, the will to live is so strong. Again, I tried, but this time I tried. I couldn't come to the top. And then at that time, I actually let go of my attachment to my kids, to my life, to my situation. And I said, my dear Ganga, if you want to take me, then take me. And that's it. Then I started floating down and going down, and then I started choking under the water. And I surrendered. I said, Ganga, this is it. I suppose you want to take me now. And then as I surrendered to the Ganga, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, this hand grabbed me and pulled me up. What had happened, the boatman who was passing by, He saw me in a precarious situation. He saw me flopping around, and he could see I was in danger. So while I was thinking about trying to survive, all the attachments went through my mind. Then the boatman came over, he pulled me out, and he saved my life. If it wasn't for that boatman, to be honest, I wouldn't be giving this class. So at that time, when you're forced, if you can remember Smaranam, Krishna, and surrender, then that is the perfection of the life. And then afterwards, when the boatman saved me, I was so happy, I gave him 300 rupees. And then afterwards, I thought about it. I said, oh, 300 rupees, that's not very much. I guess that's how much my life cost, 300 rupees. So the point here in this particular verse is that if we use this life of us trying to discuss the topics of Krishna, Katham Amritam, then at the time of death, even though it's difficult, then even though the body is frail, even the body is suffering, because we know that sometimes at the time of death, we don't know what situation we might be in. We might be pumped up with so many drugs. We might be pumped up with so much morphine. We might not even be conscious. We might not even know what's going on. We might not be even able to utter because we're in so much pain and they keep on pumping all these drugs in us. But lucky for us that if we dedicate our life towards Krishna, then there's the verse in the Ishopanishad that says, Kratosmaranam, Kratosmaranam, that now at the end of my life, as my body is being burnt, then Kratosmaranam, my dear Lord, remember all I have done for you. Kratosmaranam, Kratosmaranam. So if your life is spent Sharvanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, then Kratosmaranam, then the Lord will remember you. If our life is spent on just trying to enjoy life, the body, the senses, sense gratification, then the Lord, when we ask him to remember, then the Lord will say, hey, wait a minute, he didn't do that much. How can I remember? So the more we fill our life with Krishna conscious activities, with Krishna Katha, with Leela Smaranam, trying to remember Krishna, and we practice ourselves. I'm sure you've been in a situation when you're driving, someone cuts you off and you say, Krishna! Or when you stub your toe, Krishna! So that's how we practice ourselves. When we present it in a certain situation, then we chant Krishna. And the more we do Krishna activities, the more easier it is for us to remember Krishna at the time of death. And in case the body does give us a hard time and we can't remember, but we don't have to worry because those who are the devotees of Krishna, Krishna says, I'm the swift deliverer of those who surrender unto Krishna. So either way, if we're in a difficult situation, we are unconscious, then Kratosmaranam, Krishna will remember our activities we do. Then Krishna will deliver us. So I will stop here on this particular verse, and I will talk a little bit about Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya is one of the prominent Panchatattvas. He was born in Ludashihata. This place is now in Bangladesh, and his name was Kamala Lakshana. Kamala Lakshana means one who has lotus-eyed face, eyes. One who has lotus eyes. So Kamala Lakshana, this was the name of Advaita Acharya given to him by his parents. So we'll talk a little bit about the tattva, and then we'll go into a little bit about the past tense. So Advaita is actually a combination of Vishnu and Shiva. It is explained that when Vishnu, Mahavishnu particularly, and Rudra, Shiva, when they embrace, when they hug, then the manifestation that comes from that activity is the personality, Advaita Acharya. And Advaita means non-different. So, which means that he is Vishnu Tattva, yet partially he is also Rudra, Shiva as well. But mainly he is known as Mahavishnu. And we know that thing, there's a deity in near Govardhan in Manasi Ganga. It's a Harhar deity there, which is half Vishnu and half Shiva. So Advaita is like that, he's tattva, that he's Mahavishnu, but he also has Shiva in him. And with his glance and with his activities, then the world as we know it, the Pradhan, this is created and the life exists. But we are interested in Advaita, the Acharya aspect. Prabhupada gives a class on the appearance of Advaita Acharya. And then he explains a little bit about Advaita, his tattva. But most of Prabhupada's class is about Acharya aspect of Advaita Acharya. What this Acharya represents. One who teaches by example. So he was a Mahabhagwat, he was a great devotee, and he set the right example of how to conduct Krishna consciousness. He was a Grihastha, he had two wives. His wife was Sita and Sri Devi. These are the two wives, and he had a place in Shantipur. Some of you might have been there. And he had another place in Mayapur. So he had a house in Shantipur and he had a house in Mayapur. As you go along the path from ISKCON temple, as you make that pilgrimage, you go to Shiva's Anga, where the Sankirtan movement started. And then more or less after that, you can see Advaita Bhavan, where Advaita lived in Mayapur. So he would spend some time in Mayapur and some time he would spend in Shantipur. And the most important aspect for us as far as Advaita Acharya is concerned was his love for the conditioned souls. It pained him so much that the living entities were all deluded, that the living entities were just trying to enjoy life and performing sinful activities. A devotee's paradukhida, that he suffers when he sees others are suffering. In the material world, it's the other way around. When we see others suffering, then that makes us happy. This TV reality shows or whatever you have, they exist because we see other people suffering and it elevates the other person. But Advaita Acharya, he saw the plight of people in Kali Yuga. He saw the suffering and this pained him so much that he prayed to Krishna. And it's explained that he had a Shalagram Shila, and this Shalagram Shila was a Nrsinga Shila. So, Sankirtan Priya Prabhu, if you can please put the slide of this particular Shila. So any devotee who has been to Shantipur, then if you go to the house of Advaita, then if you're fortunate enough, you will able to get the darshan of this particular deity, this particular Shalagram Shila. And this Shalagram Shila is Nrisinga Shila. I can't say with absolute authority, but devotees have done some research. One devotee, he lived there for 2 or 3 weeks by asking different devotees, pujaris, devotees who lived, and he ascertained that this particular Shila that you see on your screen is the same Shalagram Shila that Advaita Acharya prayed on the banks of the Ganges with Ganga water, Tulsi leaves, and his sincere desire to save the living entities. These three combination brought the Lord in the form, as we know, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this deity is known as Nrisingadev. So it is the power of Nrisingadev that brought the Lord, the original Shama Shunda form, to come down. And Advaita Acharya was about 50 years, give or take a little bit. This was the age he was when he prayed, when he asked the Lord to please come and descend and save the living entities of Kali Yuga. Then, of course, we know the Lord answered the prayers of Advaita Acharya, and then he came down. And it's explained that one day, this is in Lochandas Thakur's pastimes of the Lord, Mangala, Sri Chaitanya Mangala, and it explains that Advaita Acharya, he was in his house in Shantipur. And as he was there, one day he got a premonition that the son of Sachi is the personality you've been praying for. So he had this dream that the son of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi was the Lord that he had prayed for. And it said that it was in the middle of the night, he left his house, he went and he knocked on Jagannath Mishra's house. Jagannath Mishra was a little bit surprised to see him at such an odd hour, but they knew each other. He welcomed him, and Sachi Mata was there also. She was woken up by someone being at the house. And then Advaita Acharya said to Jagannath, I need to worship your wife, Sachi Mata. So then with full prayers and pomp, he started worshiping the child within the womb of Sachi. Jagannath Mishra and Sachi were completely bewildered. Middle of the night, Advaita Acharya, very senior Vaishnava, just comes and knocks on the door and from nowhere starts worshipping Sachi Mata. But they just went along with it. And then Advaita Acharya left. And it's explained that at the time of Lord Chaitanya appearing in the world, Advaita Acharya and Haridas Thakur were seen chanting Hari Bol, Hari Bol, and they were dancing in ecstasy and they were chanting, and everyone was looking at these two older people just chanting Hari Bol, Hari Bol, because Advaita Acharya knew this is the great personality that he had prayed for has arrived to deliver the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. And then as soon as Nimai Vishwamba was born, Advaita Acharya, along with his wife Sita Devi, they went. They brought many, many gifts. And they offered their respects to little Nimai. And then Advaita Acharya, along with Nilamba Chakravarti, noticed on the feet of Nimai, there was a thunderbolt, there was a conch, there were some markings. And they couldn't understand what it was. So Nilamba said, "What are these markings that we see on my grandchild?" And Advaita said that these markings are the sign of a great Mahapurusha. Someone who's a Mahapurusha has a certain markings on your body to identify they're not ordinary persons. Some of them externally we can see. It is said that if you have like a big forehead, then it's a sign of intelligence or Mahapurusha. So if you have like lobe ears, that's another sign. If you have long arms, Lord Chaitanya had long arms. So these are some of the signs of a Mahapurusha. If you have a deep voice, this is another sign of a Mahapurusha. If you have a deep navel, then that's another sign. So then Nilamba, Advaita, they saw that Nimai had these signs of a Mahapurusha. Then from the side, Advaita Acharya saw Nimai grow. And one particular pastime is that when Advaita Acharya father passed away, he was performing the Shraddha ceremony, the Antakriyesha, the final rites. And traditionally, when you perform the final rites, then you invite the Brahmins. And they perform all the prayers, they perform all the mantras, they perform the rituals. And then after this is all done, then the Brahmins are fed sumptuous prasadam. And there's one particular seat where the most senior Vaishnava, he gets offered this seat. So all these Brahmins, they performed the sacrifice, they chanted, they performed the final rites. And when they came for prasadam, each of the Brahmins thought, "Well, Advaita is going to choose me. Well, I chanted the mantras really nicely. Well, I'm the topmost. I'm Chakrabarti Pakorananda Halava Pakora Puripad." So they all thought that they were going to be the one who were chosen. But at the corner of Advaita Acharya's eyes, he saw at his gateway Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was invited to the ceremony, but fearing that he was so-called from a low-class family and the Brahmins would get really upset, he just observed the whole ceremony from the doorway in the courtyard. And then when he came to choose the person who was going to sit there, Advaita Acharya bypassed all the learned Brahmins and went to Haridas Thakur, and he brought him and he sat him on the gadi, on the throne, on the Vyasasan. And you can probably imagine the Brahmins were completely outraged. "What is this? How is it that this respectable Advaita has chosen this low-class person? I'm a Brahmin." They were so upset. They were furious. And they said, "This Advaita, he's lost his mind. He's gone pagal. He's gone crazy. He can't differentiate a good Brahmin like me as opposed to this low-class person." And they said, "We're leaving this place." And the Brahmin started storming out. They said, "Ha!" But then as they left, then one of them said, wait a minute. There's something not quite right here. They said, "Advaita Acharya is an elevated Brahmin. He's respected by all the community of the devotees and the Vaishnavas and the Brahmanas. And if he thinks this person deserves this honor, then Advaita must be right. So even though they disagreed at the beginning, and sometimes they have a second thought, they thought, actually, maybe he could be right. So then they decided to go back and say, well, actually, do you mind if we rejoin the ceremony? Actually, I don't mind a bit of a pakora or something. So in this way, Advaita Acharya acknowledged the exalted position of Haridas Thakur, because after all, we know his name, Acharya. So another pastime of Advaita Acharya is that Advaita Acharya is senior by birth to Lord Chaitanya and spiritually, because Advaita Acharya got initiated by Madhavendra Puri, and Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master also was initiated by Madhavendra Puri, which makes Advaita Acharya the godbrother of his spiritual master. And Vaishnava etiquette dictates that you treat the God brother just like your spiritual master. So Lord Chaitanya was always in awe and reverence of Advaita Acharya. He was always respecting him. But this did not go well with Advaita Acharya, because Advaita Acharya knew who Lord Chaitanya was, that he was the Supreme Swayam Bhagavan, the original Shama Sunda. And he didn't like the respect that he was getting from Lord Chaitanya. So he devised a plan. So Advaita Acharya is known for giving Bhagavatam class, giving Krishna Katha. So he was giving a class. And then he started explaining the devotional practices through the Mayavadi understanding. And then Lord Chaitanya was there. And when he heard this, he got really, really, really upset. What is this Advaita? He is such a nonsense teaching this Mayavadi philosophy. And in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, it's explained that Lord Chaitanya leapt towards Advaita Acharya. He grabbed him and pulled him by his beard, and he started thrashing him right in front of all the audience. It's a bit like if you drag me and start beating me up in the Bhagavatam class. So this is what Lord Chaitanya did. And some of the devotees were a little bit surprised. Nityananda Prabhu was there. And, you know, Nityananda, he always knows what's going on. And he started laughing. And Advaita Acharya, internally, he was so happy. Finally, the Lord is chastising him. Then he got his wish fulfilled. So that's another pastime. Another pastime of Advaita Acharya is that when the Lord was doing his Mahaprakash revelation, and each devotee, he was identifying, this is who you are, this is your Nitya Leela, this is who you are in Krishna's pastimes, and he was giving everyone the mercy. And this went on for hour after hour. Everyone's getting the mercy. There was only one person who was not getting the mercy, who was not getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and that was Sachimata. And this pained the devotees so much. The Lord is giving everyone such mercy and insight of who they are. Sachimata was not getting it. And then the devotees, they went and asked, my dear Lord, Sachimata, she is dying to get your mercy. She is dying to have your darshan. And the Lord Chaitanya was saying, I don't want to see her. She is an offender. She is an aparadhi. Then the devotees are completely bewildered. Sachimata, an offender? She's the most gentle mother you would ever find. She loved Nehemiah so much. What could such a mother have possibly done to upset Lord Chaitanya? So then they went again and they petitioned Lord Chaitanya. Please tell us, what is such a mother's offense? Then Lord Chaitanya said that such a matter creating an offense to Advaita. When Advaita was giving classes, none other than Lord Chaitanya's brother, Vishwaroop, was going to those classes. And by listening to Advaita Acharya's pure discourses on Krishna, on Srimad Bhagavatam, he became detached from the material world and he took sannyas. So then Sachimata said, Advaita isn't one, he's Dvaita. He divides, he's two. He divided the household, the family. He let my son Vishwaroopa take sannyas. And she also feared, because Lord Chaitanya was always associating with Advaita Acharya, that Advaita will have the same influence on Lord Chaitanya as he did on Vishwaroopa. So she had this kind of a little bit of thing against Advaita. And then Lord Chaitanya said, she has to go to Advaita and apologize to Advaita, and only then I will give her the mercy. Of course, Sachimata went then, Advaita Acharya was completely, completely devastated. He said, there's no offense whatsoever. I don't see any offense. And if there is, then I forgive you. And then after that, when Lord Chaitanya heard that Advaita took no offense or forgave her, then Sachimata got the mercy. So here the lesson we can learn, Lord Chaitanya took it very, very seriously, Vaishnava Aparad. Lord Chaitanya took it that then if anyone commits Vaishnava Aparad, we will not get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Supposedly Sachimata had committed this offense, and because of that offense to Advaita, she would not get the mercy, and only if Advaita forgave her, then she would get the mercy. Then another wonderful pastimes, I think at the beginning of the lockdown, I think we were going this particular pastimes, when Lord Chaitanya first took sannyas, he wanted to go to Vrindavan. But Lord Nityananda and Advaita had tricked Lord Chaitanya to go to Shantipur, and well, near Shantipur. Again, Smarama, memory starts to fall apart. And that's where Lord Chaitanya, he came, and he thought he was in Vrindavan. And then that's when Lord Chaitanya asked, am I in Vrindavan? Advaita Acharya says the famous lines, wherever you are is Vrindavan. And this was the first alms, this was the first bhiksha. One of the duty of a sannyasi is to ask alms, beg for food. And Advaita Acharya's house, the Grihastha, was the first place where the Lord as a sannyasi took alms and had prasadam. There's so many different things to be said by Advaita Acharya. One of the things is quite prominent is that in Shantipur, on the, I believe it's the appearance of Madhavendra Puri, that there's a festival called the Shantipur Festival. So originally, the local pujaris of Advaita Acharya, they would perform, but in the 80s, they asked ISKCON to take over the management of this particular festival. And it started off small, but now if you go, I've been there a few times, it's a big thing. You help make this kitchen. The pots are so big there. They're massive, massive pots. You can easily fit about 20 people inside there. And they cook this kitchen all day long. So Shantipur is a quite potent place. One is the place where Advaita Acharya invited the Lord to come here. And this is a very, very nice pastime. I love this pastime. It's one of my pastimes that even when I was reading it yesterday, I kind of still get a few goosebumps from listening to this particular pastime. The pastime goes as such. One of the pujaris who was at Shantipur noticed that there was a householder who was coming, sitting in the temple room, and he was chanting. And this particular pujari would notice that this householder would come every now and then, and he would chant. And then he was chanting so intensely that he could see that this person was relishing chanting the holy names. And he could see tears coming out from this particular householder. He didn't know who this householder was. He didn't want to disturb his bhajan. He just let it be. And he noticed every now and then this particular person would come and just chant, pray, give a donation, and then leave. And then for a little while, he didn't see this person come. Then, just from nowhere, this same person came. But this time, not as a grihastha, but he came as a sannyasi. And because this pujari had seen this person come again and again chanting, he immediately realized this was the same person. And again he observed and just let him do his bhajan. And again, this person was chanting and chanting and chanting. And then as he came, took a little chanamrita, offered a donation, the pujari just could not help himself and asked, "Who are you? I see you come here at Shantipur, at Advaita Acharya's place, chanting so deeply, concentrating, praying. I'm moved by your devotion. Who are you? Please tell me." And the sannyasi said, "My name is Abhay Charanavindam Bhaktivedanta Swami. I am the lowly disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I come here to pray and chant to Advaita Acharya because my Guru Maharaj has given me a mammoth task of spreading Krishna consciousness, and I don't know how I can fulfill it. And tomorrow I am going on a Jaladuta to the west to try and take this message of Mahaprabhu. And this place where I chant is the exact place where Advaita Acharya, Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, three great personalities of the Sankirtan movement, they would meet here on a regular basis and they would discuss how they would spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. Lord Chaitanya had predicted in every town and village, my name will be chanted. Advaita Acharya prayed to save the fallen souls. And in Navadvip, they got the mercy. In Nadia, they got the mercy. Jagannath Puri, they got the mercy. South India, they got the mercy. And most likely, they were thinking how this will go in every town and village. So this place is very, very dear to me. It's very potent. So I am begging Advaita Acharya to please help me to carry this Sankirtan mission to the West so that this prophecy of every town and village can be fulfilled. Then the sannyasi left, Srila Prabhupada, our very own founder, Acharya of ISKCON, we know. Then later on, the pujari, he's noticed in Shantipur, some Western people were coming. They'd never seen Western people there. And all of a sudden, they started coming there. And one of them gave a back to God to this pujari. And the pujari was flipping through the magazine. And then he saw a picture of Srila Prabhupada. And immediately he thought, this is that same person. He has fulfilled the mission of Advaita Acharya, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, his Guru Maharaj, to spread the Sankirtan movement in every town and village. And he was so happy and overjoyed that he went to the devotees and he explained this particular pastime. Time is running out, so one last pastime. We know that Advaita Acharya is the one who brought Lord Chaitanya to descend in this world. Interestingly enough, it was also Advaita Acharya who asked the Lord to wind up his pastimes. And when Advaita Acharya sent a hidden message to Lord Chaitanya, when Lord Chaitanya was residing in Jagannath Puri and Gambira, the message was read. This was a message from Advaita Acharya, and it read something like this. A message from one madman to another madman. In the marketplace, there is no more rice. And the storekeeper has closed his shop because there's no rice. One madman, message to another madman. There's no rice in the marketplace. The storekeeper is closing his store. Most of the devotees did not understand the hidden message of this particular message. Only Swarup Damoda understood. And it's translated as this. The madman is Advaita Acharya. He's mad with ecstasy of Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And the other madman is Lord Chaitanya, who is forever chanting Krishna, feeling the deep separation of Krishna. So one madman is passing another message to another madman. And the rice, what does the rice represent? This is Krishna prema, that Lord Chaitanya has done such a wonderful job that this Krishna prema is spreading everywhere and everyone is getting the mercy. Whether you're qualified or not qualified, everyone is getting this rice prema, and it's spread everywhere so much that the storekeeper, who is Lord Chaitanya, is now closing the store and it's time for him to wind up his pastimes. So what Advaita Acharya asked the Lord to come and do, give Krishna prema, spread Sankirtan movement. The Lord had fulfilled that wish of Advaita, and now Advaita is saying, now you can go back to your eternal spiritual abode. Advaita Acharya lived for about 125 years. So today, if we get an opportunity, there's so many pastimes of Advaita. I only touched the tip of the iceberg. If you can try and meditate, and ask for his mercy, then we can also get smaranam. We can also get the remembrance of the Lord. And then hopefully at the time of death, all the smaranam, Krishna Katha that we are listening to will be there when we come at that final testing point at death. We will remember Krishna, and then we will attain perfection and go back home, back to Godhead. And maybe, hopefully, we can enter into the pastimes of Advaita Acharya. Shri Advaita Acharya Prabhu Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. If there's any questions, comments or corrections.
Thank you so much, Jai Krishna Prabhu. What a phenomenal class. You know, starting with Uttama as a human form and Smaranam, taking us through the Bhagavatam, as well as these exalted personalities that you just mentioned in your class. It's just so nectarian, so relishable that we know, including the pakoras and the halvas too. It actually took us into a journey, and yes, in your own very amazing style, also sharing with us your very personal incident with the Ganges. I know it is so, so touching. Thank you for an amazing class. We do have a couple of questions. One is about the explanation or this incarnations of the Lord in many ways, and his energies and his energetics. How can we explain how the Lord manifests in incarnations from two personalities like Vishnu Tattva? And obviously we've got Rudra here as well. And so Advaita Acharya has come in that form, merged into one. How does that actually manifest?
As far as technically is concerned, I'm going to be honest, I'm not 100% sure how it manifests in the practical terms, but as far as in the scriptures explained, it manifests in the form of Advaita Acharya. I don't know if this is a crude example. I guess when parents conceive, then they have a child. Of course, there's not that conceiveness going on with the transcendental personalities like Vishnu and Shiva, but you know, it is said that by their embrace, that's how Advaita Acharya came about, manifested. The technicality, unfortunately, I'm not too clued up on that. If anybody wants to add, then that's fine.
I think that gives us some nice clues about how that could have manifested, as you mentioned. You know, their embrace would then bring about a mood, and that mood is potentially Advaita Acharya. So yeah, thank you for sharing, Prabhuji. Another sort of question is around the amazing lessons that you've taught us, or that you've went through in the pastimes about Vaishnava Prad. And you said in case of Sri Advaita Acharya, they could see that the Lord was not pleased with Sachimata due to the offense potentially. But how are we supposed to know when we commit offenses against Vaishnavas, especially, and which Vaishnava, you know, so that we can obviously ask for forgiveness and reconcile?
So the way I kind of see it is that most of the time, is that we are driven somewhat by our false ego. And the false ego generally means that I am right and my way or the highway. So this is where the Vaishnava Parada, at least in Kali Yuga, happens. We're quite adamant in our own viewpoints in life. And then when discussing or not accepting someone else's viewpoint, that's how we generally commit our Vaishnava Parada. Of course, there's sometimes a gross one as well. You know, like one devotee smacked me in the mouth, but I probably deserved it. But, But the subtle ones are the ones that maybe us trying to get a little bit better than the other person, or not accepting, or try to be a bit broader. Now, the way to find out is this, is that sometimes the super soul or the subconscious will tell you, or you will feel a little bit uneasy about something. It's whether you will react or act on that. That is your choice, whether you will accept that and realize. Because most of us will know when we do something wrong, when we kind of get into a loggerhead situation, then there is some kind of inner feeling in our heart that is not resting quite right. And that's the point when we think, well, and the other one is an external situation. When you naturally offend someone, they're going to avoid you like a mile. They're not going to come anywhere near you. So then if you think you've offended someone and someone's not interacting with you, or something like that, then you go and say, Prabhuji, have I offended you in any way? I see that you're avoiding me, or something like that. So it's quite a complicated, long-term kind of answer. But these are some of the thoughts. We will know a little bit within our own heart if we're just being stubborn and trying to create an offense. If we got the humility where that we can go, like those Brahmins, they realized they committed an offense against Haridas Thakur. So within their heart, they thought actually maybe Advaita Acharya is onto something here. So then they realized their mistake and they went and apologized to Advaita Acharya. So it's within your own psyche to realize your mistake. And most of us know if we're stepping a little bit out of mark.
What a phenomenal answer. Thank you so much. And thank you for also sharing that amazing picture of the Shaligram Shila. How phenomenal to get the darshans this morning about, you know, about the special Narsingha Shila that Advaita Acharya actually prayed to invoke the Lord's appearance. We've run out of time, run out of questions, but thank you again, Jai Krishna Prabhuji.
Krishna, thank you. Hare Krishna.